This is Coach E on Coach Talk, a HME production.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to tonight's episode of Coach Talk. It's been a couple of days since I've been with you guys, but you know, we got some exciting things that are going on. Stay tuned. April 24th, keep that thought in your mind. April 24th, keep the date in your mind. There is going to be an amazing launch on that day, and you want to make sure that you're paying attention to social media, to Google, to all kinds of platforms, because this is like a major thing that's going to happen. And Coach E, this is one of her dreams come true. So I had to get that out the way. I want to give a shout out to all of our sponsors and advertisers that actually have sponsored and advertised Coach Talk to make sure that you get that business and finance advice that you need. We give a special shout out to Exit Resource Realty, Justice and Change for victims of nursing homes, I mean, for nursing facilities. I want to give a shout out to Sky Zone for being a sponsor as well. And we just want to just say thank you to everybody that tunes in every time Coach Talk airs. So without further ado, I just want to bring on these two young ladies that you see, Miss Joanna Haskell and Miss Tracy Pompey, and they are the founders as well as executive board of Justice and Change for Victims of Nursing Facilities. Hi, ladies. How are you?
Hi.
Hi.
How are you,
Erica?
How are you? Doing well. I am so happy that you joined me on tonight. You all have been on several times, and we have a really good time chatting about the different things that you all have going on and how you are activists, of the of people that find themselves in nursing facilities. And so it's exciting when we get you all on air. We're able to chat it up and see what's new going on in your industry and to find out how others can help. Before we get started, I want to make sure you guys can hear me okay. Tracy, can you hear me? Okay. Can you hear me, Joanna?
I can hear you. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Tracy, go ahead and log out for me and then log back in. And we'll just give her a few moments to get back with us. Okay. And we'll go straight on in. So one moment.
Okay.
All righty, it looks like Tracy is back with us for the one moment.
Okay, I can hear you now.
Okay, perfect. I tell you, computers are wonderful, but they still are created by humans, so they do have some flaws. But but again, welcome, ladies. Thank you for coming and talking with us here on Coach Talk. Look, for those that have not had an opportunity to get to hear you all's story, even know anything about your organization, could you please take some time and let everybody know who is Justice and Change for Victims of Nursing Facilities, and why did you all get started?
Well, first of all, hi. I'm happy to be here. My name is Joanna, And I'm the president of Justice and Change for Victims of Nursing Facilities. And we started this organization due to the fact that we lost our parents under abuse and neglect in the nursing facility. So our passion behind it is to do as best we can to help people who are going through the same thing.
And I'm Tracy, Vice President.
Okay.
And
okay, so no, you're fine. I'm sorry. Can y'all hear me? Because it seemed like it's a delay.
I can hear.
There is now that there is a little delay now. Yes.
Okay. All right. Let me. Okay. Go ahead, Tracy. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Okay. Yes. Hi. I'm Tracy, and I'm Vice President. And like Joanna said, this organization was started through our own tragedy, and so we wanted to bring awareness to other families that are walking the same journey of having a loved one, having to put a loved one in a nursing facility. Because there are a lot of avenues, there are a lot of issues that go on in nursing facilities that families don't know about. And so we're here. It's our goal to bring awareness, to bring about change.
Okay, so you said there were some tragedies that you all personally experienced that caused you to want to be advocates for those that find themselves in nursing facilities, right? Mm-hmm. And so with that being said, like what things do you do to help with those that are in facilities, and what kind of issues are you actually going head to head with?
Well, one of the things that we, first of all, we springboard off of everything that we've been through and what we've observed. And we get a lot of calls, and we interact with a lot of families who are walking through the same thing. And no experience is the same. Everybody's experience is different. But the foundation or the common thread is abuse and neglect, right? And so what we've done is we've worked very hard at connecting with families and those who are trying to support their loved one in a nursing facility. We work very hard at that. We work very hard at talking with our representatives where it really needs to start to change the laws, the way they're enforced, because the laws are there. They're written to support nursing facility residents, but for some reason they're not enforced. So again, like I mentioned before, one time ago, it's a two-pronged approach, community involvement, connection, and getting the information out there to help and strengthen and support families that are going through what we've been through. And the other side of that is to get in the face of our representatives, get in their ear, and let them know, hey, this needs to stop. It needs to change.
And one of the things,
so both of you,
is we give them tools. I was going to say, one of the things we do is we give families the tools.
Oh, no, go ahead, Tracy.
I was going to say we give families the tools as well to navigate that journey. You know, there are a lot of tools on our Facebook page to navigate that journey of having to put a loved one in a nursing facility, things you need to look out for.
Okay. So both of you at some point had family members that were in facilities and unfortunately did not return home. I think, Tracy, for you, it was your father, and it was supposed to be a temporary stay. Yeah. And he never returned home to you all. And Joanna, I believe it was your mom. Mm-hmm. And hers wasn't as temporary as maybe Tracy's was. But I guess what you experienced, which was a little bit different from Tracy is the, I guess, neglect. Is that the best word to use?
Tracy's dad went in for rehab. And my mom went in for long-term care, but my plan was for her to be there until we can situate our, you know, things at home and then take her out and bring her home. And one of the things that disappointed me greatly is the fact that if I had what we have towards others in terms of that's going through it, if I had somebody or organization that was willing to give me the support and the information that we are giving to others now, would have been a tremendous help to me personally. There's so many laws that are, well, I don't want to say laws, but there are so many things that's happening at the government level in terms of nursing facilities. I mean, it's not all lost. A lot of families feel like, hey, you know, what else can I do? I've told this one, I've told this place, I've reported it here, I've reported it there, and I'm not getting any satisfaction from it. Well, it goes deeper than that. There's not a ceiling, you know, and a lot of times families feel like, hey, I have nowhere to turn, I don't know who to talk to. There's no ceiling. You know, just the other day, the Federal Trade Commission and the Department of Justice and the Department of Health and Human Services just launched a cross-government inquiry into the impact of corporate greed in healthcare. This is something that was launched. And this is the stuff that makes you understand that there's things shifting behind the scenes, but we encourage people to speak up. You know, and let it be known, hey, you know, this is not right. This is something that has to be done. Too many people are dying, literally dying. We had an incident just the other day. You know, somebody that is, I don't want to say a member, but for lack of very involved with our organization, is advocating for her mom in a nursing facility. But in the process of all that, she's also become very, I don't want to say attached, but knowledgeable about other patients or other residents that are in there and friendly with them, and knows of abuse that's going on and is actively reporting it, not only internally, but also externally. And unfortunately, one of those residents that she was advocating for, she went in to visit her mom, and they were wheeling this lady's body out. Jesus. And it really disturbed her. Yeah. It really disturbed her because she knew that this woman was being abused and neglected. You know, when you have black eyes and bruises about your face and body, and you're not getting food, you're not being fed. That's very real. So these are the kind of things that we speak about and we are passionate about, and we intend to constantly be in the air of those who can make the difference in changing this and start saving lives.
And one of the things, you know, also, it's, I was going to say, one of the things as well is talk about the hidden profits that these corporations are able. These corporations, believe it or not, are able to hide on their financial reports how much money they're actually making.
Right. You know,
they're able to hide their money, so it looks like, oh, we're not making a profit, so we can't afford minimum staffing levels because we're not making the money in order to have the staff there. But that's not true, because they're able to hide their profits. And that's one of the things as well that contributes to low staffing and patient care, poor quality patient care.
I mean, effectively, what you have.
So, what we have,
effectively, what you have is a corporation that's running a health facility like a corporation. And so, near the two shall meet. You know, these are people's lives. It's like going into a hospital and running the hospital like a corporation. You know, these are people's lives that depend on food. They depend on medicine, the right kind of food, the right kind of medicine, and staff. They depend on being trained and properly equipped to handle the varying degrees of illnesses in these nursing facilities. You can't take somebody who has basic knowledge, a CNA, that has not been specifically trained to handle someone with Alzheimer's or dementia. Do they know about sundowning? Do they know about how to approach them? Do they know about how to deal with them when they have those moments of that they're in sometimes? I mean, these are the things that's lacking, right? So it's a grave concern to us.
Absolutely. So, you know, I know that a lot of times we don't put a lot of emphasis to people that are in nursing facilities for several reasons. Number one, I think the time that we live in, because everybody feels like they have their own problems, that if it's not directly affecting them, it's not a big issue. So I think we're dealing with a time or an age in which it has to stop at our own front door before we become involved. I think that's one thing. The second thing I want to point out is that we feel like, well, this only applies to elderly, but many people of all ages end up in nursing facilities.
Yes.
And if you're able to talk and communicate for yourself and you're in one of these facilities, you're at risk. And I think, you know, just kind of breaking this thing down so that people will understand the urgency. I think we as a society have to understand it's not just for when we get old. Like, these are things that are affecting now.
Exactly.
Your parents, I'm pretty sure, Tracy, your father wasn't that old. He probably was, what, in his 60s, maybe 70s when he went in and, you know, just didn't come back. You know, I mean, think about this. These are our parents and direct grandparents that we're talking about. So we're not talking about people that are 80 and 90 years old that are so many generations maybe away from us. We're talking about right here, right now. I had the experience of taking care of my grandfather, and he was 94. And I got a crash course, just like you ladies, right? Yes. I got a crash course in taking care of him and paying attention to, like, what is going on. I mean, he was in a room by himself, and I come back, and he has a man in there with him who has COVID. They put a COVID patient in with my perfectly healthy grandfather, and I had to pull him out of that facility. Like, we're not doing this. Like, so many things. But I think what I'm saying tonight is that I want us to kind of take off that mindset that it has to be an old person and it has to happen to me right now for my concern. The thing is, one day, the Lord willing, we all will age. And so the best way to deal with these issues is now, where we are able to really rally and put, we got the strength, the energy, the ability to gather people and really force laws to change, to really hold these organizations, these companies accountable.
You know,
and that's one of the things that when you have, I was going to say, and that's one of the things, Erica, we have to think about it now in order to get that change going, because now that the Elder Justice Initiative is trying to mandating these minimum staffing levels, you have these facilities, you have these corporations saying, oh, well, we don't have the money. We don't have the money. We can't afford that. You know, so we have to get that now.
The thing I wanted to also point out, Erica, is that unfortunately you have, if you follow the money trail, it goes pretty deeply. And you would be surprised to know who literally has their hand in profiting from nursing facilities in this state of Virginia. It's a sad situation, and it runs from one agency, one department. It runs from one to the other, and it's not all that profit because nursing facilities, but the ones that really are affected and the ones that really are hurt behind this are the residents and their families. And it's important for the families and friends that care for them to speak up. And that's one of the things that's a lot of parents, I'm saying parents because, you know, if these were kids, it wouldn't be a problem. People would be on the doorstep of the house, you know? I mean, everybody would be making noise if these were kids or animals. But I am very... I am very much, I don't want to say disheartened. I become disappointed and sometimes discouraged because often we've heard family members say, we can't speak up because we know that they'll retaliate against my loved one. My mother told me that. My mother said to me, she said, Jojo, don't keep speaking out about this. I'll deal with it. And I said, no, because they're abusing you now. And what is to say what are they going to do? What are they going to do different? You know, they need to know that somebody knows. And, you know, it's so tricky and it's so deep. I mean, we had another family member talk about the different forms that are in these nursing facilities that they make them sign or they offer to them to entice them into a contract that causes them a lot of problems. They can't get out of it. And the only person who stands to benefit from it is the nursing facility. This happens often. It happens so often. There's the arbitration agreement. You walk into a nursing facility to sign something, to sign your loved one in. You're already emotionally taxed. You're worried. You're stressed. And you're having to sign all these forms. They're telling you, oh, just sign here. And this is what this says. And if you sign right here and you're signing and the arbitration agreement is there and you don't realize that you're signing away your right to sue them, if your loved one is killed or dies by abuse and neglect, in the nursing facility. I mean, wow. So it's important, you know, it's important. It's so important. We try to come along to encourage and inform and family members to become equipped to know their rights and not to be afraid to speak up because we all are getting older.
And it shouldn't be.
Yes, we definitely are.
And the thing about it is a lot of families feel, and that's what facilities rely on. They're hoping that families will feel intimidated.
Yeah.
You know, they feel intimidated when they come in with all these forms for them to sign, hurry up and sign these forms. And so the family feels intimidated. And you shouldn't feel that way when you're trying to put your loved one in a nursing facility if you have to. And make a good decision for them.
So some might be watching and saying, well, Erica or Coachee, this is a business and finance show. How does this all work together? I'm so happy you asked. I love it when they ask these questions, right? Because here's the answer. And ladies, you know, we all about solutions. That's why you have the organization, because you're bringing awareness and getting the community involved. Well, from a financial standpoint, there's some things that we need to start putting in place now while we're younger, that when later on, as we begin to age, we have stuff prepared, right? We understand that the medical industry is a multi-billion-dollar industry and it's not going anywhere. And absolutely. So how do you protect yourself? You make sure you get the right coverages now to protect you later. So what kind of coverage are we talking talking about. Let's talk about long-term care. Yeah. I don't think anyone thinks about long-term care until it's too late. But when you talk about long-term care, now we're talking about how do I want to be taken care of if something happens to me? You know, what kind of resources can I have at my fingertips? How can I make it easier for my family to provide for me? Because, you know, I always tell people, look, you come in this world, it's costing. You leave this world, it's costing. And everything in between is costing. So guess what? We got to figure out how to deal with the cost of when we have our highs and our lows. And one thing I don't think we talk about enough is long-term care, you know, which provides not just facility help, but it provides private help in your home. So maybe, you know, your family doesn't feel comfortable with nursing facilities. There are a lot of families out here. I didn't feel comfortable with it. But just because I didn't feel comfortable with it, my grandfather had certain resources. And then I had, personally, I worked from home, so I could do things differently. But everybody's story is not the same story, right? Some of us have to leave the home to go. Some of us.
That's the thing. When we're younger, nobody thinks about long-term care insurance. Nobody says, oh, I'm going to need long-term care insurance when I get older, so let me put this away now as I'm young. You don't think about that. And so then when you get older and you see that it's $400 a month, $400 a month, it's like, wow, now I have to try to pay this. When
and most people get declined, though. Because when you start getting long-term care, once the illness happens, the insurance companies are not going to underwrite that.
Exactly.
Let me put another spoke on the table here. I know we're talking about long-term care, and that's appropriate because it's planning and it's getting organized. And that's well, that's done, that you do well to do that. But there are a lot of people out there right now that are struggling that cannot afford another insurance. There are some people right now who don't even have health insurance because of the lack of affordability. But long-term care and planning for long-term care doesn't always only mean you get an insurance, but it also means that you sit and you make plans, however the plans may be, towards the goal of how you want to be taken care of. And if you think about it now, then involve family, you know, talk to friends, talk to people that you're close to. Look at what agencies are out there that can offer assistance if you can't afford long-term care insurance, you know. But the fact that you're thinking about it and you're planning toward it and you're trying to get things organized, not only if you have children, it also helps them because that's something they don't have to think about. So it's important to structure that. I had one lady tell me, oh, I don't have to worry about anything. My family's going to take care of me. Okay. And what if they don't? And that's why it's important to know what are the tools out there for you to have? What, like I said, agencies. There are agencies and there are other places you can go to see exactly what kind of support you can get if you don't have your family or if you don't have any family.
And that is a good resolve for now. Like if you're facing issues now of I need help, right? And yes, there are agencies out there. But then I think also we have to take a better account of our personal finances. You know, 80% of people do not budget. And that means they're not even saving. They're living check to check. And so I think as a society, we have to begin to be more studious with what we receive and make better decisions and understand that the dollar is really, you know, about ascertaining needs and wants, right? But what are we putting it into? You know, am I spending all of my time partying and vacaying and, you know, making sure I got the flyest weave and the nicest hairdo and eating the biggest dinners, but then I have nothing in my bank account? I have no policies in place. I have no plan for my money at all. I'm just existing, and so is it. When it comes and when it goes. And I think that if we start having these tough conversations while we are still in the job market, while we're still in good health, that we can better prepare for later. You know, it takes the stress off the family. And we're not neglecting at all the responsibilities of these facilities. But I think that we can navigate the narrative a little bit better if we take better control over what we're doing now, right? You know, you're right, Joanna, what you said. Most people, you know, can't afford another insurance. But if you got, but if you understand that you come in a line where a lot of people have cancer, why are you getting a term policy when you're still blowing money on craziness? Go ahead and get a whole life policy. Let it earn cash value. You might not be able to cash out that policy when you pass away. You might have to cash it out before then. But now you're taking care of your family who has to in turn take care of you.
Yeah.
We have to understand some things and do and move a little bit differently.
Well, it's a mindset, Erica. It's a mindset because this is not what they're teaching the high school. This is not what it's being highlighted there. This is the mindset in this generation and in this era and this time and season comes through change when there's an experience or when there's an event. You know, somebody ends up who's not old in the nursing facility for rehab. Then all of a sudden, there's a reality check because it could happen. You know, but it's the mindset doesn't think of these things. The mindset is thinking, like you said, of other things, the here and now, as opposed to the future and long term. And I think a lot of, you know, there's a lot of nursing facility residents, nursing home residents that don't have family or have family and they don't check for them. They're just there by themselves. And it's unfortunate, but these are the things that I feel once you're advocating, not only for yourself, and everybody has to do that. If you're young and you're eligible, you're able to go to work and you're able to make money, then you need to advocate for you because saving, like you mentioned, setting a plan in motion. If you have children, even more so, setting a plan in motion. What if something happens to me? What's going to happen with my children? What if I become incapacitated? How are my children going to manage? I mean, all it's the mindset rather than waiting for an event to happen. With my mom, I was not prepared for her to end up in a nursing facility. She stayed with me for a long time. And we did a lot of things at our house, our home, to accommodate, you know, what she was going through. But she had an event and that sent her to the hospital. And that was that rush, that change, you know, get her to a nursing. She needs 24-hour care and blah, 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 blah. And it happened like that. And I wasn't prepared for that emotionally and I wasn't prepared for it financially. But I learned, you know, and I really implore people to think about, even if you can't afford long-term care insurance, think about long-term care, period. You know, put aside whatever you can. Talk to family, talk to friends, and get in a group. If you belong in a church, get the conversation started. You know, these are all things that can change the mindset and help people better prepare in case there's an event or something that happens and you end up in a nursing facility. Nobody wants to go there. But
and there's always And they're not always people who end up in nursing facilities due to age. It could be car accident, any type of accident, you know, that debilitates you to that point where you end up in a nursing facility at, like I say, at a young age. There are so many avenues that it can go.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, people that end up with cancer, and that's young and old now, you know, that at one time you only saw certain things happen to older people, but you're finding young women, young men having cancer, having lupus, having this, you know, all of these different things. You know, I have a family member that very young. He's in his early 30s. And, you know, he was at home alone and fell. And when he fell, and he's pretty healthy, like no real health issues, he fell, he couldn't get up. He hurt something where he could not get off the floor. And he was in his home on the floor for days, screaming for someone to indicate him. When they finally heard him, they got him to the hospital, but he had to learn to walk again, short-term memory issues. This stuff happens. And I don't think we realize something just as freak as that, falling down a step and then hitting something the wrong way and it messes you up. You know, it can happen to anybody. And I think we have to come with that mindset. Like you said, it is not about just old people. And I hate saying old people, but I'm using the terminology that younger generations use. It's not just about them. You can be somewhere right now, sitting at a restaurant, partying somewhere, and something just happens. That puts you in a place where you have to do rehab and all kinds of stuff. And you might get your life back, but still, it happened. And then
these facilities.
Go ahead, Joanna. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Everything you're saying is right on point. And one of the things that I feel very strongly is the fact that if we don't collectively be that collective voice to speak about the atrocities that's going on in the nursing facilities, you know, CNAs, doctors, nurses, they're all mandated reporters. Mandated reporters being that if you see something that's not right, you're supposed to report it. And it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. Mm. And well, I shouldn't say that. It doesn't happen as it should. And in the case that somebody does report, nothing really happens. And it's not a campaign issue. I mean, we're in an election year. Do you hear anybody talking about the seniors or nursing facility residents? That they're talking about minimum staffing. They're, you know, nursing facilities don't want minimum staffing, but none of our representatives are making this an issue or a key point in their campaign. It doesn't happen. You gotta ask why. Why? Because they're getting older too. Why is this not a concern?
Because it's too much. And see, the thing about it is, it's too much of a moneymaker. When you have people in nursing facilities, that's too much of a moneymaker for these corporations. So that's why it's never a campaign topic. And there are other people making money from these facilities.
Yes.
So that's why it's never a campaign topic, because they don't, you know, these big corporations don't want to lose.
And those investors in it, though, they don't want to lose money as well. But this is why it's important for us to speak about this and continue to speak about it and continue to talk to our representatives and say, hey, look, what are you doing about this? We write about the fish. We write about animal abuse. We write about child abuse. We write about every and anything. But who's writing about the elderly or the senior population, especially, that are suffering? And they are suffering. I have a voice recording of my mother calling me on the phone, bawling because she could not get her medicine for a major migraine she had with a sitting brain tumor. They knew this.
Jesus.
And she was crying to me on the phone. I was just coming from a conference. She's crying to me on the phone. I mean, it's bad. And people, you have to talk about
it's, you know, and I have to, yeah, and I have to even address that. You know, I think at some point we have to come to a realization. We just came off of a major epidemic. COVID was a major epidemic. Mm-hmm. And a lot of our medical personnel, we thank you very much for it, but some of them actually burned out during COVID.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that this issue wasn't taking place prior to, but I'm pretty sure after COVID, as a lot of things have magnified mm-hmm. after COVID, this is mm-hmm. one of those issues that has magnified.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we have to, just like with any profession, when we're burning out or burnt out, we have to be accountable for that in ourselves. Yes. And say, you know what, this, I love working with people. I love helping them, but I'm at a place in my life that I can't do it anymore. I need that time for self and take on another profession. Or mm-hmm. if you can take time away, you know, this goes back to if we stop living on 100% of our income, right? And learn mm-hmm. to live on 40, learn to live on 50 to 60% of it, we can be mm-hmm. even more impactful in every mm-hmm. area of our lives, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you're now able to step away and say, let me regroup, you know? Mm-hmm. But we can't do that when you know, when we are living on almost every penny and then yeah. begging and scrapping for the penny, you know, and mm-hmm. and I can honestly say that, you know, I've been there, you know, and God had to remind me a couple of days ago as I was in my quiet time with him. And he said to me, what is the percentage I told you to live on? And I'm sitting there and in my mind, even though he's telling me this, and I had to remember, Erica, you cannot be stubborn. You cannot be stubborn. You got to change. You got to change. I'm like, mm-hmm. God, this is huge because, you know, we're in a society that the government operates above and beyond what it has. And you're saying that you want me to exist in a society that is about greed and all of this stuff. I gotta have. Never satisfied. Never happy. Always, I gotta have. Mm-hmm. And you want me to live, but I get that, you know? How can you build wealth for the next generation? How can you make sure that your family are not going to stress when you can no longer, you know, do what you do? How is this going to happen? And you know, I keep circling back around to our personal finance because I believe that it plays a major part in everything. Yes. I think, you know, not only are these facilities low staff, but some of these people need to just retire. Some of them need to just say, you know what, I can't do it no more. It doesn't make them a bad person.
I think, you know, we often talk about the toxic environment in the nursing facilities. There are a lot of nurses and CNAs that are stressed out and burnt out. And the mishandling of staff and the mistreatment of staff in the nursing facilities is very real. That spills out or spills over to the care of
exactly.
the residents. Mm. And then there's lack of training. That's a huge deal, lack of training.
You know.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Tracy.
No, I was just going to say, I was just going to point out one thing to Erica. You know, when a corporation, when a facility goes from 8 hour, have their staff come in 8 hour shift, when they switch to 12 hour shifts, it benefits the facility because they can cut minimum staffing and still make money because now they're working, they're having their staff work 12 hour shifts. Right. So that's another way that facilities, corporations know how to keep money, but lower the quality of care. So it's all strategic, I believe. Yeah. It's all strategic. They know.
Sorry. Yeah, it's very strategic.
Well, and if we look at it from a business standpoint, one of the things that you learn in business is how to build that bottom line, right? You run as lean as you can and you increase profit. And you know, and I'm not saying that it's not applicable to that industry, but I think we have to redefine what running lean looks like in that industry. I don't think running lean means that, you know, I have 100 patients and only two nurses. I don't think that's what we need to call running lean anymore.
Exactly.
What that minimum should be per patient, right? How many staff? And I think we were talking about this at the top of the hour. You know, how what is that ratio, right? And then once we identify that, then we can start saying this is what it looks like, you know, and making it uniform across the board. And then even with overtime, you know, I understand that families desire overtime, especially when you're in the 9-to-5. You know, that's that extra money. But I think even monitoring that is necessary too, because you know, if you're working, you know, all of these long hours and many days, eventually the patient isn't going to be taking the best care of. But then guess what? You aren't either.
Right?
You aren't either.
That's so exactly now, right.
Yeah. So, you know, and we understand when you're not getting proper rest, what happens? Your immune system starts to go down. All things start to happen. So then now you are just a walking disaster.
Zombie.
To people. Yeah.
You're a zombie.
But you know, the
you're a zombie having to take care of the patient.
Is that, and I've mentioned it before, and I think you've heard me say it before, Erica, that the human resource area of the nursing home and the way, who are you hiring? Like, are these people actually, are they a fit for taking care of this level of illness and this level of need? Because it's one thing to have a job. It's like, if you need a job and you have three job openings, you have one for a welder, one for a mechanic, and one for a chemist, but you know you have secretarial experience. Which one, you're going to choose one just to say you have a job? I mean, there are, the cold hard facts is that there are some people working in the nursing facilities that really should not be working with human beings in that capacity, because their personality and their ability for compassion is not there. And that's somebody that's not trainable. You can't train somebody how to have compassion. And so technically they really should not be there, but because there's this, you know, just hire, once you have a certificate, just come on. But you don't train them to know that there are certain people that need to be fed with, say, a Hoyer lift. You can't just come in, drop the food on the table and walk out, because they need to be set up and they need to be fed. You know, and then this is one of the big pet peeves I have with the fact that the hiring of people in this kind of environment is crucial. You really have to pay attention to whether people are going to, that you hire, are going to actually, regardless if they have a certificate, or diploma, but are they going to be able to take care of somebody the way they should, the way they're supposed to? And often, I mean, I've seen a nurse that was caring for my mom. She was giving her her meds, and I saw her at her cart, and I was in my mom's room, and I know she was bringing my mom's med. She came and brought my mom her meds, and then my mom looked at it, and she said, "There's one missing." My mother said to her, "There's a pill missing," and she said, What pill, Ms. Cartwright? Because she was a little bit irritated. And she said, "I usually have a yellow pill, the clear yellow pill. That's not in here." So she took the little cup back and she went back and she said, "Okay, it's there now." I sat on my mom's bed and I thought to myself, "Jesus, take the wheel." Yes. Literally. She said, "It's there now." She forgot to put it in there. And my mom was able to
And here's the things. Here's the thing. Things like that happen. And we understand that. But the problem is that if your mom wouldn't have recognized it, if no one would have caught it, she would have been, you know, without
she would have been missing a pill. Yes. She would have been missing a pill. Exactly.
That pill tells a story of the fact that, yeah, things could happen. But when you have that job, there should be checks and balances and rechecks because of people's lifeline. This is their lifeline. You know, you can't play around like that. When my mom needed her meds, I sat down and when she was with me, I sat down and did her meds myself. In each of the little compartments, went down the list, rechecked myself to make sure I wasn't missing anything and to make sure I wasn't giving her too much of something that she wasn't supposed to get because her meds were very, you know, milligrams were very high, most of them. So this is why I say, you know, what about people who don't have that ability to know, who just take it and swallow? There's one of our board members, her brother was in a facility. They decided that he needed, what was it, seizure medicine. Never had a seizure in his life. And they decided they're going to start giving him seizure medicines. And then on top of that, they decided after a couple of weeks, they were going to increase the dosage. And
oh my God,
the insanity behind that situation, she literally had to, she went there. Went up to the room and pulled her brother out just as he was. This is the reality of the environment.
It is.
Unfortunately, and it's nobody's talking about it.
And so nobody's talking
about it.
Yeah, and that's why we.
Nobody, I'm talking about social services, adult protection services, the Department of Health. These they're not. This is not a big conversation for them.
But they know about everything. They know about everything that's going on, but it's not being talked about. And that's why we are so diligent in helping families to be aware, helping families to be aware and to know what to look out for.
Yeah. Yeah. Ladies, thank you so much for joining me tonight. And for those that you heard tonight's episode, but you're like, oh, I really need to get this over to, you know, someone, definitely check out our website. That's heartsoundmediallc.com. This episode will be uploaded on tomorrow for replay. If you have any questions, maybe you are dealing with a family member, a loved one that is in a nursing facility right now. They may not be elderly. They may be young. They may be elderly. It doesn't matter. And you are saying, hey, I need some help. I need to understand some things. I need to be pointed in the right direction. Or maybe you're saying, look, I know what y'all are talking about. I'm fortunate that I'm not dealing with any of the neglect issues going on in these facilities, the mishandling of my loved one. I'm very excited, but I do know that what you're saying does happen and I want to get involved. Please reach out to these ladies. They really need your assistance, your help, your hours, your manpower, even your voice to spread what they yes. are doing, because there are people that need the help. And Joanna and Tracy, can you please tell our viewers tonight how they can reach out to you if they want to be a part, if they want to help in any form? Let them know how to get a hold of you.
Yes, they can reach us. We're on our Facebook page is under the same name, Justice and Change for Victims of Nursing Facilities. We have a website, Justice and Change for N as in Nancy, F as in Frank, victimsrva.org. And we can also be reached by phone. 804-839-1833, because if they can volunteer, we are looking for volunteers to help us speak out with what we are dealing with and help families.
So we have just a few minutes. You all have a birthday gift bag.
Birthday gift program. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Smiles and hope. For nursing facility, yes. nursing home residents, birthday drive, smiles and hope, because we're okay. trying to bring smiles and hope to nursing facility residents.
So we've adopted a nursing awesome. Facility and we are in the process of adopting more. And we get the requests from each of the residents for their birthday month. And so every month we honor the birthday residents of that month by giving them a basket or a bag with what they requested and any other little tidbits we can put in there to brighten their day.
So if someone wants to donate to the cause to make sure that more residents are able to get smiles and hope, your birthday gift program, how would they be able to donate money to you guys?
So right now we are asking for donations through Zelle. We have Zelle. Other than that, you feel free to write us a check and you can send it that way. All of the information to do that is on our Facebook page and in our website. And you can call us directly, call 804-839-1833. And sometimes we have donations that come in forms of items. You know, people would donate blankets or T-shirts or various things that they think that nursing facility residents can use, or, you know, just something that they'd want to give to them to help them to brighten their day. And it's been going super well, but we are asking for donations because we want to adopt more nursing facilities, and we're in the process of doing that now. So donations are welcome.
Some of the things that the residents ask for are seek and find books, seek and find puzzles. We sometimes we get teddy bears. Sometimes we get odd items like Beyonce posters, playing cards, things like that.
And snacks. They love snacks.
Oh, definitely snack. Definitely snacks. Can't forget that.
Okay. All right. So again, if you want to donate to their birthday gift program, definitely reach out to them, find them on their Facebook page or go to their website. And this is something that we did not say, but we want to make sure you know. They are a 501c3 nonprofit organization.
Yes, ma'am.
I can't tell you to write it off because I'm not an accountant, But the ability to write it off is a possibility. You want to check with your accountant for your personal write-off situation. Mm-hmm. So I thank everyone for joining me tonight. This is your host,
Coach E. Thank you for having us, Erica.
Thank you, Erica.
You are so welcome. You are welcome. And of course, I'm going to have you back again. So just be prepared.
Thank you so much.
And I wanted to say that you're welcome. You're welcome. So if you haven't already liked and followed Coach Talk or HME Heart Sound Media on Facebook, please definitely follow. There is going to be a major announcement happening about what's going to happen or launch on April the 24th. And we don't want you all to miss this exciting news. This is Coach E. I love you all very, very much. And I know that the Lord loves you more and there's greater in store for you. If there was anything tonight that stepped on your toes or opened your eyes, I pray that you say, thank you, Lord. Thank you, Jesus. And the reason why I say that is because that means that he's ready to course correct and get you on the right path. This is your host, Coach E. You all have a blessed evening.